The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you. 9 minutes past 10, Tuesday the 17th of October. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. I hope you're all well this Tuesday morning. Coming up shortly, Community Garda information that's on the way, but I also want to read some of your comments. Hi, Greg. I'm currently a hematology-oncology patient at LUH. If I call the oncology team with a concern, I'm told to go through the ED. My elderly mother was referred to gynae recently by NowDoc for gynae issues, took her to gynae and was sent to the ED to triage her there. Just to return her back to gynae, protocol only reason given, why does clear-cut cases for a department within the hospital have to go to ED to overstretched staff? Morning, Greg. Can the names of the politicians be made public who allowed the new contract for the hospital consultants not to be allowed to speak out when they see things that are not acceptable to patients? Thank you. I don't have them, obviously. One cannot make a comparison between Letterkenny University Hospital and St. Luke's Kilkenny. It's not that simple, of course. And I just on air, I can't. I don't like to speak without a bit of research. But I'd have to sort of dig into that a little bit. I don't think it's a direct comparison. It's obvious that Letterkenny Hospital is underfunded because Donegal votes Sinn Féin. Same with all services being underfunded, neglect as a punishment. Well, we spoke to a former head of the HSC that said there was no particular notion against Letterkenny University Hospital. Hi, Greg. My husband, Hugh, also gets Lidl and Aldi mixed up. He just calls them Laldi. Okay. I think the brothers that own the two of them, so I think they must get on and all. But it's just I can't differentiate. I can once I'm inside because there's different stuff in different places. But in terms of if you say, well, which one were you in, Lidl or Aldi? I think that the government aren't upping the budget for hospitals and healthcare so that the public think it'll be a good idea to privatise the health system. That would not make a lot of sense, though, if that were a strategy. I'm not saying it isn't or is, but it's not a good one. A caller wants to know if we can get confirmation if they're planning on altering the frequency of the traffic lights at rush hour traffic in order to filter the traffic quicker. This is the Polestar roundabout. Well, they're going to be smart traffic lights. They have sensors. But as was said to us yesterday, you're dealing with the same amount of traffic. So anyone expecting all of a sudden a much quicker commute or what have you, some might get that, I don't know, some might not. But they are smart traffic lights. So they'll know when the traffic is backed up on one particular approach. That'll take a couple of weeks to commission correctly. Let me see here. Letterkenny Hospital, Mary T on yesterday, speaking of transients in the health sector. There's nothing more transient than the ministers themselves who are constantly changing their areas. There's no point in continuing any discussion unless there are actual consequences for individuals involved in the decision making. And a graveyard in South Donegal, a birthday party with a bar and all the bits was held in the graveyard. An actual bar, they say, flower arrangements all in white and a walkway up to the grave. This went on for the best part of a day. How was this allowed to happen and what is the bishop and the parish priests going to do to ensure that this doesn't become a thing in all of our graveyards? Is there no respect for anything anymore? No, this is... I'm not familiar with this at all. It's in the south of the county, but it almost seems too bizarre to be true. Apparently, a full bar set up in a graveyard. If you have any insight into that, 08660 25000 or give us a call on 07491 25000. Good morning to Audrey, Marie and Patricia, as well as Patrick, Dolores, who's watching from Galway. She's down there as part of a David James show in Galway. How are you getting on, Dolores? Good to see you still with us, even though you're further south. Beth, Annie, Rosemary, Dahi, all of you very welcome and thanks for watching the stream across our YouTube and Facebook channels. All right, more on the way.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
Good morning to you. You're welcome along to Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 17th of October, and it's a very welcome return for Garda Niall Maguire from the Falkara Garda Station. Good morning, Niall.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you up. Thanks so much for that. Right, okay, we'll start with appeals and a criminal damage incident in Letterkenny, Niall.
Yes, this happened on Sunday. This is going back a few weeks, Greg, maybe 5 or 6 weeks, but the investigating guard has asked me to mention this morning. So on Sunday, the 27th of August, passed at 19:50, which is 10 to 8 in the evening, at Glenard Park, Long Lane. A number of men armed with hatchets damaged two English registered parked cars, and they caused substantial damage to the both vehicles. And then they also went on then to break the windows of the house where the vehicles were parked outside. The men got into a white Volkswagen Golf and drove down Long Lane. So obviously we're very interested in finding any witnesses to this. And with the passage of a few weeks, maybe somebody might have thought more about this and would like to come forward. They can do so confidentially through the confidential telephone number 1-800-666-111. Or if they want to speak to the Garda member investigating, call Letterkenny on 074-9167-100.
No, I mean, people, because of the violent nature of this, might be reluctant to speak to someone local, and I'm sure you would assure them that it's done in full confidence. But just so people know, if you ring the Garda confidential line, Niall, what happens?
It's basically, you have two options, Greg. You can actually speak to an operator, or you can just leave a voice message. Right. And whatever you want to leave in that message is fine.
Okay, just so people have an understanding of that. Yeah. The next appeal is criminal damage again, and in Letterkenny again.
Yeah, a small business premises was the victim of a random attack on the 15th of October, just on Sunday afternoon. Now, again, the afternoon, this happened at 20 minutes to 4. A small business premise near the theatre in Letterkenny on the Melton Road. Someone threw a glass bottle and broke a large window pane on this business. So again, my colleagues in Letterkenny are investigating, so they can be contacted on 074-9167-100.
All right, and heading west now to Dunloe, and damage caused to a lorry there.
Yeah, at Mean Moor Dunloe on the Guidoor Road, Thursday past the 12th of October, between 08:15 and 09:15, so 1 hour in the morning of last Thursday, a parked lorry had its trailer damaged at Guidoor Road, Mean Moor Dunloe. The trailer had its retaining load straps cut, and I suppose that could have been dangerous, Greg, if maybe the operator, the driver hadn't noticed, and he would have had an unsecured load then, Greg. So any information, please contact my colleagues in Dunloe, 074-9522100.
Okay, now a theft of a purse.
Yes, a substantial loss for a lady at the 40 Lynn Retail Park. She was in a large retail shop down there and went to the toilets on Tuesday the 10th past at exactly 3 p.m. She left her purse in the toilets, and when she went out, she realised that she had done so, and she went back in and the purse was gone. Unfortunately, the purse was cream in colour with the letter D on the front of it in gold. So if anyone has any information that can help us with that, there was a good bit of cash in it. There was bank cards and her driving licence. Now I would caution that the CCTV is very good in the vicinity, Greg. So we're hopeful that currently the Garda Daniel Murphy, who's looking after this, will be looking at that CCTV, and he should have an image of the suspect. So I would advise that person that took this purse, please contact Garda Daniel Murphy in Letterkenny and arrange for its return. 074-9167-100.
Yep, as Niall says, Gardaí going through very good CCTV there. Property handed in this time.
Yeah, I don't have a great description of this, Greg, but for obvious reasons, we don't give out good descriptions when the property handed in. So if someone in Buncrana or the Muff area in particular has lost a purple push bike, it can be reclaimed at Buncrana Garda Station, and the phone number is 074-9320-540.
Now, a hit and run offence in Raphoe next.
Yes, at William Street, Raphoe, last Tuesday the 10th of October, a parked vehicle was damaged by an English registered vehicle that unfortunately failed to report or failed to remain at the scene. This occurred at exactly 13:06 and was captured on the dash camera of the injured party. So any information to my colleagues in Raphoe on 074-9145-114. And with any appeal, Greg, you can call to any Garda station.
Yeah, now I think anyone with children, and even those with not, will know we don't get an instruction manual training, or we don't have to pass a test. It can be tough, from toddlers right up to teens. There's a bit of assistance, though, for parenting a teen, with the recognition that it can be tough.
It is tough, Greg, yes, of course. And many, many times when I'm dealing with parents that maybe something has gone wrong in their teen's life, they're kind of looking at me for advice. And, you know, I don't have the answers for them, Greg. You know, I'm not in a position, I'm not the proper professional to give advice in relation to teens. But I got this through an email there this week, and I thought it was an excellent thing to mention on your slot today. The local youth and family services are having a workshop, and it's beginning on Monday the 20th of November, and it's for 5 weeks, starting at 9:30. Now, 5 weeks might be a big commitment for some people, but I suggest maybe even attending for the first little bit on Monday the 20th of November, and that's on the local youth and family services at New Line Road, Letterkenny, just up the road from the Garda station. It's in relation to tips and tricks for communicating and getting through and helping your teen make responsible choices. So yeah, that's that can be found on the website for the local youth and family services, and the person I spoke to there was Gary Glennon, and Gary has given me permission to give out his number, and it's 086 123 7917. 086 123 7917. Listen, you don't have to have a renegade or a runaway teen to know that parenting a teen can be tough. I highly recommend anyone that has a teenager, whether they're going through difficulty or not, it sounds like an excellent opportunity to learn a few new skills.
All right, and finally, a different type of an appeal based on strong intelligence, as far as I understand.
Yeah, we have strong intelligence, Greg, on this one, and we're looking for witnesses about an amazing secondary school musical, You Can't Stop the Beat, which is based on the musical Hairspray. It's been conducted by Loretto Milford Secondary School, and they're performing at Remelton Town Hall this week, Tuesday until Saturday at 7:30 p.m. As I say, we have witnesses and information that say it's definitely worth going to see, and tickets are available at eventbrite.ie. That's a school in my own area, Greg, and I would encourage anybody to snap up the few remaining tickets.
They're a stealer here. Come here, well, who said you didn't have a sense of humour?
Well done, yeah.
Cardinal McGuire, as always, thank you so very much indeed. We do appreciate you calling up. That was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 17th of October. It's back with you after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday, and you can catch up across our social media and on Garda Síochána social media in the afternoon. The number for you to get involved in the conversation is 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Now, yesterday or last evening, there were some people arrived in the town on buses. Their identity, I don't know. But we have had a few contacts on that, by the way, and it's not something we're suppressing, by the way, because some people seem to think that that's doable. It's not. It's just we have to gather information on it and gather voices to speak on things like that as well. So it does take time. So it's not being ignored. And I know some people are concerned and others are concerned at the reaction. We'll cover as much of all of that as we possibly can. As I say, the number just for you to get involved in that and any conversation, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or to give us a call on 07491 25000. Okay, Patrick joins us now. Patrick, thanks very much for taking the call this morning.
Yeah, glad to, Craig, and glad you have me on too.
No, it's our pleasure.
Craig, I know you've already done a programme about Airtel, but unfortunately I didn't hear it. And I just prepared a few lines on what I have to say on it, but I won't make that conversation long. It's getting on to another bit of the conversation I'd like to have. About RTE saying that it's a manufacturing problem, you know, with the equipment not being available. That's the reason why they closed it. And I'm saying I'll believe that when I see the BBC having the same problem with CFAX. That's the teletext thing. And I've looked at Airtel for 30 years. And now, if I want the national news, then I will have to use the car. Of course, fossil fuels again. In a newspaper, and I don't hear anybody speak about it. It seems to be acceptable, and I think it should have been left going as long as possible. And what is happening is the elderly now are being told to go online, and 680,000 of them don't do online for their own reasons, they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Either. So it's just it's a fact of old age, just. And all this technology, including Airtel, it's creating a problem for our elderly and vulnerable. And in a recent survey, it found that 1 in 6 can't read or write.
Mm-hmm.
And when they make a phone call, they're now being told, to go online. Of course, how did they do that? We can't read or write. And then the discrimination side comes into it then, and I think I would describe it as discrimination anyway. And,
it's kind of interesting, Patrick, because I'll be honest with you, when I read in the newspapers that Airtel was closing, I was a little bit flippant on it, and I shouldn't be, I should know better, because I didn't really think, well, who's watching it? But then, as you explained there, that there are many, many people that aren't online, that they want sort of instant access to a form of internet, so to speak. And for many, Airtel was that. They could flick through the news or the TV guide or the sport. And as I say, I always think it's best to be honest, hands up. I was actually a bit flippant thinking, well, who uses Airtel now and again? But every day is a learning day, Patrick, and you've opened my eyes. Of course, there's going to be a big cohort that relied on it.
And it's only if you're elderly you discover this. The television, you see, you've only got to put it into Airtel, and you know you're not going to do that much harm compared to a computer. And an older person can memorise how they do it. These are things about computer they can't memorise. And I remember the time of the flood, it was said that RT didn't cover enough. You know, the big flood was up here 7-8 years ago, that they didn't cover it. Well, I had it well covered. And you know how I done it? I went on Airtel. And they give it details on it, and I hear this conversation, they didn't cover. Well, I knew. We'll take it to see. The Airtel now is only one of a few problems. I'll just go on to the other ones, so if you can, quickly, for you, Greg.
Yeah.
We'll give it a case of, right, you've got the Airtel, and you have, this is discrimination on this side of it. To me, it is. The Ploughing Championship, they charge a 5 pound extra if you can't pay cash. And the banks they wanted to do online. This is from an older person's point of view now, and vulnerable people. The ATMs are disappearing. Checking in at the ACT is a problem for them. Parking your car in some parts of this country, they don't want you to use cash. 23% of farmers can't do online, yet they have to fill in the forms and correspond online. The phones we are told to go online, that you press this and you that, and you don't get a customer service person. Then you have Airtel, you've got the airports getting a ticket, you have the coaches, you have to book, and you're discouraged from getting paper bills. And we have a communication problem because we're not able to do all this technology. And there's not a word about it. I don't hear a politician saying too much about it.
We talk about it an awful lot because, of course, then there's also going to watch inter-county football that people can't because you have to buy a digital ticket. And I'm not being defensive. We've covered it extensively on this programme, but it does seem to be one thing after another. Death by 1,000 cuts excludes an awful lot of people.
Yeah, and that's why I'm getting on to Airtel about that. It is one of the many things to come. And I think people that are younger don't realise seniors are losing a way of communication. And unfortunately, they won't come on and read the news, the media, the radio, or in papers. They won't do it because I think they don't want to be heard saying, I can't do this online, and I'm one of the silly boys. We're not one of the smart people that we can't do it. They don't admit it. I'm saying it out loud. My name is Patrick McLaughlin, and here I am talking about the things I can't do. And we also have at future days, you've got electric car charging, where I've seen an English reporter saying that, and he was very familiar with technology, he was saying he couldn't manage it. This was in England. But whatever kind of a system of cars they had, he couldn't manage it.
Yes.
And he's very good at online. And I know yourself and Highland Radio have highlighted many a time, I hear you, saying that not everybody can go online. And we appreciate that when you hear it, Greg. We do, and you've done your bit. And people who insist on technology, I wonder, do they actually know if their parents or grandparents or aunts are able to do it? Because I think they won't. Because I've done my own research into this and asking people my age.
Yes.
And there's very few of them can do it. So people don't realise how bad this situation is.
No, but unfortunately, it seems, despite the likes of you, Patrick, and many others raising concerns, like, say, for instance, the only thing that really backtracked on was the NCT. The Ploughing Championship didn't really. Football didn't really. You know, it seems to be that... Obviously, there's not enough people affected, even though people, older people and others as well, because there's a lot of people that are, we always talk about it being older people, Patrick, and I understand that's the point you're coming from. There's lots of people of very different ages that favour cash, have a distrust of online, or have reading and writing issues whereby it's very difficult for them to book a ticket online or to do online stuff. So it's I get it that it's older people, but it's much more than older people as well.
That's more adding to the
strengthens your argument.
And I think we shouldn't forget the figure now again, Greg, is roughly about 680 older people. Now that's only older people.
Yeah.
Of course, there's plenty of young people, and young people have come over here to this house here have the smartphones, and they can't manage to get it out at such and such a system, and our young boys are able to do it for them. And I'm talking about young people now.
Mm-hmm.
So these smartphones are not able to manage them altogether. They think they are, but when you get like my young fellas having to give them a hand out to do it, well, to get out of something they clicked on and can't get out of it, it lets you know how young people can manage these phones.
Yeah,
of course, also, a lot of them can.
A lot of older people actually don't want to have to ask other people to help them to do stuff. They want their independence.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they don't want to sort of say, can you do this for me or can you do that for me?
Yeah, they don't admit it, actually. But I was talking to you about younger people. They think they might understand how you do this, that, and the other on the phone, and then they find out, oh, I'm stuck on something and I can't get out of it and I'm not going to ask anybody about it. So Greg, I don't know. Somebody has to say this and say, look, come bring this to a halt, because there's room for shops to, example, to take cash and cards or go online. There is room for us too.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, we're not being allowed the room.
Okay. Stay there, because Yvonne's with us, because not only are older people, or old people, but older people in some cases, not only do they feel excluded, they actually feel penalised for wanting to do things a certain way. And Yvonne, that's the case with your mum, isn't it?
That's right, Greg. Listening to that gentleman speaking, it just really resonates, because like my mum has been on with one of the ESB providers or whatever, but in recent times they want her to go direct debit in order for her to get a lower rate. So she said she's not going direct debit because she goes to the post office for the last 50 years and pays her bill, which is also a social sort of meeting as well, people. But because she doesn't go direct debit, or because she doesn't go paperless, she's been slapped with a very heavy tariff, like every, I would say about 10 cent more, because I have been on to them and I said, look, this is a very ageist and situation that you shouldn't be penalised because you pay your bill.
So just to be clear, Yvonne, so everyone realises, she is actually being paid up to maybe 10 cent per unit extra, per unit, not per bill, but per unit extra, because she doesn't want to go paperless or direct debit. She wants to keep control of that bill. She wants to be able to sort of say, right, that's how much my electricity is. I'm going to go into the post office and pay it with my money and keep in control of it that way. But because she wants to do that, and as you mentioned, there's a social element, she can't get the lower per unit rate from this provider.
That's up to 10 cents a unit.
All right, Yvonne, unfortunately, your point's well made, but your line is failing on us. So, Patrick, that's another example there of a lady that wants to feel in control of her finances and to pay in person, but is having the cost of that is a much higher rate per unit for electricity. Crazy.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's per unit on that area, Sean. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but she can't get a better deal, you see, because it sounds to me like there's direct debit deals that are available to her.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that's a different tariff now that you might be on about, but I wouldn't be certain, Craig. But I'll give you one example. Have I much time left, Craig?
Just a couple of minutes, if that's all right, Patrick.
Right. I've been cut off my service provider twice, and I was asked the reason, because paper bills and the environment. Now, I had a job to get it back again, but I'll just give you one last example, Craig, and we'll finish then. We have a shop called... I don't think it makes any difference to tell you the name. A shop called the Big Hardware Place in Derry, called B&Q. And you were encouraged to pay with these machines. It's gone now, by the way, for years. We were encouraged to pay with a machine, right? And this was on a Seniors Day, which was Wednesday. And you got a 10% discount. And the next thing is, after a few months, the area was fenced off. And with a note saying, "We have listened to our customers." Elderly people went in on Wednesday, they got their shop and they got a 10% discount, and I think they objected to this paying by machine, and then it was fenced off, and there was no more just forcing them on to do machines.
Mm-hmm.
"We have listened to our customers," was the note.
Okay.
I think that gives an example of what is happening to our shoppers even. They're not able to do this kind of stuff, pay by machine, you know. So that's it, Greg.
All right, Patrick. It's been lovely chatting to you. Very well articulated.
And you, Greg.
Thanks so much.
And you're doing us proud now when you say this another time, Greg, about our situation.
Well, yeah.
And thanks for doing it. And thanks for having me on.
Wouldn't be here with the likes without the likes of you, Patrick. That's the reality.
You'd probably do it up, Michelle, Greg.
No.
Because
no,
I think
no.
Everybody's prepared to move. Everybody's prepared to move ahead.
No. Leave no man behind, Patrick. Great. That's what I say. Leave no man behind. God bless you, Patrick. Lovely to chat to you. Have a lovely Tuesday, will you?
Okay.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye, Patrick. Thanks very much, Yvonne. If you're still listening in the car, my apologies, the phone line cut out, but we heard you loud and clear as the situation as it relates to your mum. And if anyone else actually wants to join that conversation, 08660 25,000. I disagree with the use of the word old people and older people. Can we not use the term senior people? Let's use a little respect. I'm a senior woman, not an old woman. I generally go with what people refer to themselves as, to be honest with you. I avoid phrases like pensioner. I think older people is the... Now, this sounds like I'm contradicting you and you're the senior lady and it's up to you how you be called. But I tend to use the word older people because I don't like the terms aged or pensioner or OAP. I thought they were disrespectful. So I actually thought I was being respectful by referring to people as older people. I've never used the phrase old people, but I certainly would use the phrase, my preferred phrase is older people, because I think it's more reflective. And then what it means to me too, if I call people older people, the listener then can sort of opt in and say, well, I'm that person. And that could be someone who's 65 or someone who's 80 could go, well, I'm not that person because I'm not an older person. So that's why I think senior, calling someone a senior person, has more of an age connotation to it. But that being said, you're a senior woman and I fully respect that. But I generally use the phrase older people or then go with whatever the caller says. Hi, Greg. Would agree with that man. Even try and get to speak to someone from my bank would take you half an hour. Half a day, push this button, push that button. It's an absolute nightmare. It is indeed. Push one for this and two for that and three for your and five for six and seven. Back in the day, you used to be able to hash the hashtag or, you know, like just keep pressing buttons and they'd eventually put you through to someone. Unfortunately, they got wise to that and that no longer works for me. I totally agree with the last caller. I checked first thing every morning, Airtel, for the news and sport. I thought elderly and not so elderly people how to use Airtel. Now it's gone. And to be honest, Greg, I was generally shocked when you thought it was gone for years. Again, I've always liked to be completely upfront. I didn't really see it as a big deal because it didn't affect me. And that was naive, not naive, but it was selfish of me. So to hear the likes of Patrick and yourself, it's educated me as to how, for some people, it was and remains important. So Justine McCarthy is the author of a new book. It's An Eye for An Eye on Ireland, A Journey Through Social Change, New and Selected Journalism. Good morning, Justine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you back on the show. So talk to me about this book and the journey you take us on.
Well, it goes back over four decades. It actually starts with the inauguration of Mary Robinson as president in 1990. And I chose that as the starting point for the pieces of selected journalism, because to me that was such a milestone in the development of Ireland and its sort of awakening, especially socially. I was asked by Hachette Ireland to do this book, and I'm absolutely thrilled to have done it now. I had forgotten so much of what I had written. I've been around an awful long time, Greg. That's one thing I learned from my weeks in going through the archive in the National Library. It's just extraordinary what a privileged career I've had, and the astonishing, you know, array of stories that I have been allowed to cover, and the places I've been to, and the events that I've witnessed. Yeah. And my overriding feeling at the end of the book was just I'm the luckiest person that I got into a career that I have absolutely loved and has been a real privilege.
And through the writing of the book, did it really come home? Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes in life, we just go through life, don't we? And we don't necessarily take the time to sit and reflect. But obviously, when writing a book, it forces you to do so. Like, were there times we went, I did that? Who's this? It's, you know, you know what I mean?
And there were times when I went, oh, God, of course, did I write that? A lot of times, especially the early stuff, you can see your rawness.
But it's also great to be able to see the growth as well. You know, that's nice, yeah. Actually, in a way, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, to have that archive of your ability develop.
And it really was like watching myself grow up in tandem with my country growing up. And that was a lovely feeling as well. You know, you set out with all these ideals about what you're going to do, and you have no choice. You have no control over the news agenda. News happens and you go to where the news is. And when I was, you know, a younger journalist, there was a huge international story going on in this island, and there were journalists coming from all over the world to cover the Troubles. You know, we were here on this island, and it affected people greatly south of the border as well. But I would have spent a lot of time north of the border in those days, and my biggest memory is of covering funerals. Funeral after funeral after funeral on both sides, and the sense of despair and the bleakness and the growing polarization with every killing and with every reprisal, it meant more alienation, more polarization. But I'm looking now at, for instance, what's happening in Israel and Gaza, and I can see exactly the same thing happening there. Recriminations are not the answer. You know, and I do think that Ireland learned a lot from the Troubles and from the peace process. And Ireland actually is taking its place and has been taking its place amongst the nations of the world. And I'm quite proud of what our government has done in the past week or so. And I do think that stems from our own recent history and what we've gone through.
Just in terms of journalism as a career, Justine, there's no future journalist will ever experience journalism like you did, or to some extent like I have, in that, you know, and even you referenced the Middle Eastern crisis, how that is being reported, the mainstream media, as it's often described, but also the way it's being covered on social media and the control of the narrative, almost not actually reporting on what's happening, but reporting on what people's opinions are on what's happening. And we see that an awful lot in this country as well. is this a natural progression of journalism, or do you think it's a great loss that we don't have, you know, a group of sources on the scene, you know, reporting what is happening? It just, those days are bygone days now, it seems.
Well, I think it's really tragic to see journalists being killed in Gaza. The big difference between the horrendous savagery that was wreaked on Israel and the horrendous savagery that is now being wreaked on Gaza is that what's happening now is largely invisible, because it is so dangerous for journalists to be there. And I just admire the ones who are there, and we owe them so much. But also because there's no electrical power, civilians in there can't charge their phone batteries, they can't phone it, they can't contact the outside world. This preponderance of opinion over, as opposed to fact, and the massive influence of social media, I'm hoping that that is going to be a blip. You know, people call it the mainstream media. I prefer the term professional media. Journalists are actually trained, and they're trained to source stories and to verify them. And we have already seen a lot of propaganda and a lot of lies being reported and unverified stories about the horrors that are happening there. And, you know, if we kill off journalism, we kill off democracy.
Yeah, for sure. And professional journalism, as you described it, can't find itself being drawn into a race to the bottom either.
No. And, you know, professional journalism and professional media does have to shoulder some of the blame for what has happened. I do remember in the 1980s, there was this sudden sort of determination in the media that it had to stay in touch with young people, and it had to be entertaining as well as informative. And I think it went a little bit too far into the entertainment, you know, cutting the space for stories, putting much bigger headlines, much bigger pictures. And I'm not just talking about tabloid papers. It happened in broadsheet papers as well. And there was this sense that the intelligence of readers and listeners was being undermined. And I think we are now returning to longer reads. And you look at the New York Times, for instance, and the wonderful journalism it's doing. I think, you know, there will be smaller professional media, but it will be really, really professional in the future.
Yeah, and just finally, in your book too, you know, your career spans a really important part in Irish history. You reported on the big stories. You reported on the Troubles in the North. We get that story in your book, but also, of course, you entering a male-dominated career and your journey through that as well. So it's an interesting multi-threaded story here, I think you're going to bring us.
Well, it's only when you look back that you see how misogynistic and sexist it was, because when you're in the moment and you're full of enthusiasm and you're flying here and there to, you know, covering stories, you're not, as you said earlier, you're not reflective about it. Sorry. But,
thank God that was your phone that went. I thought that was you.
My iPad falling
as long as it's the iPad and not you, go ahead.
Shock at what I'm about.
I thought you fell through the floor. Go ahead, Justine. Sorry.
I remember walking down the corridor in Independent House one day, and a male colleague walking behind me, whom I hardly knew, saying, "Justine, you have a good figure, but you've no arse."
Oh wow!
And I was so conditioned, not to mind he being conditioned, that I just walked on and didn't say anything, you know, to my utter shame. I shouldn't have taken that. But it was a place full of men, and it was very macho, and there was a heavy drinking culture and, you know, temper tantrums in the newsroom and language that's unrepeatable. No women editors, no women correspondents. Women were seen as lifestyles writers, and we were a novelty for the lads. Mm. So I tell younger women this, and they're absolutely horrified.
And do you think there are stories that were covered, that maybe they would have been covered, perhaps with not the same success and detail, if, and maybe this is the sexist thing to even ask, but if we didn't have female journalists like your work on the child sex abuse scandal and other issues, do you think that there was a particularly important role female journalists played in making sure that those stories were pursued and spotlighted, or is that almost a sexist question even to ask?
I don't think it is sexist. I think that, you know, a woman like Mary Raftery, the late Mary Raftery in RTE, did extraordinary work in exposing all of that. And I think all these stories came to the surface, not because of journalists, but because of the survivors mm-hmm. and their determination to tell their stories. But I think many of them found it easier to make contact with women journalists, okay. that there was a sort of an empathy there, and to tell their stories. And, you know, when I joined the Irish Independent, it had only very recently dropped what it called the women's page. And it was still choosing to run reports of the Caller Cosengas Housewife of the Year competition than to run stories about gender pay inequity or that sort of story. So I think that as the sort of critical mass built up of women reporters, I think there was much greater engagement mm-hmm. between women readers and listeners and women journalists, and that has been to the benefit of the whole of society.
Okay, well, it's obviously a very detailed and important journey stroke story that I can't do justice to in 10 minutes, but the book is an eye on Ireland from Justine McCarthy, who we've been speaking to. Justine, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the book. And I'm sure it's going to continue to be a huge success for you. Thanks for your time.
It was a pleasure, Greg.
All right.
Thank you.
Justine, take care. That is Justine McCarthy there.